Yogam
Rupam Pramani Padame Pradakasi Yogam
Yasma Priya Priya Viyoga Sam Yoga Janma
Yasma Priya Priya Viyoga Sam Yoga Janma
Chokagni Nasa Kalayoni Shuddhaya Mana
Chokagni Nasa Kalayoni Shuddhaya Mana
Yuko Shatham Tadapi Dukam Atadiyaham
Yuko Shatham Tadapi Dukam
Bhuman Brahmami Vadame Tavadasya Yogam
Bhuman Brahmami Vadame Tavadasya Yogam
Because of which,
because of existing in the material world,
Kriya, pleasing.
Apriya,
not pleasing.
Viyoga,
a separation.
Sangyoga,
and combination.
Janma,
whose birth.
Shoka Agnina,
by the fire of lamentation.
Sakala Yonishu,
in any type of body.
Dayamana,
being burned.
Dukkha Oshadham,
remedial measures
for miserable life.
Tat,
that.
Api,
also.
Dukkham,
suffering.
Atat,
one.
I'm sorry.
Atat,
diya,
by accepting the body as the self.
Aham,
I.
Bhuman,
O great one.
Brahmami,
am wandering
within the cycle of birth and death.
Vada,
kindly instruct.
May,
unto me.
Dava,
your.
Dasya Yogam,
activities of service. Translation. O great one, O supreme Lord, because of combination with pleasing and displeasing circumstances, and because of separation from them, one is placed in a most regrettable position within heavenly or hellish planets, as if burning in a fire of lamentation. Although there are many remedies by which to get out of miserable life, any such remedies in the material world are more miserable than the miseries themselves. Therefore, I think that the only remedy is to engage in your service. Kindly instruct me in such service. O Great One,
O Great One,
O Supreme Lord,
O Supreme Lord,
because of combination,
with pleasing and displeasing circumstances,
and because of separation from them,
one is placed in a most regrettable position
within heavenly or hellish planets,
as if burning in a fire of lamentation.
Although there are many remedies
by which to get out of miserable life,
any such remedies in the material world
are more miserable than the miseries themselves.
Therefore, I think that the only remedy
is to engage in your service.
Kindly instruct me in such service. Purport. Prahlad Maharaj aspired to engage in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. After the death of his father, who was materially very opulent, Prahlad would have inherited his father's property, which extended throughout the world. But Prahlad Maharaj was not inclined to accept such material opulence, for whether one is in the heavenly or hellish planets, or is a rich or poor man's son, material conditions are everywhere. Therefore, no condition of life is at all pleasing. If one wants the uncontaminated pleasure of blissful life, he must engage himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Material opulence may be somewhat pleasing for the time being, but to come to that temporary pleasing condition, one must work extremely hard. When a poor man is rich, he may be better situated, but to come to that position, he had to accept many miseries. The fact is that in material life, whether one is miserable or happy, both conditions are miserable. If one actually wants happy, blissful life, one must become Krishna conscious and constantly engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. That is the real remedy. The entire world is under the illusion that people will be happy by advancing in materialistic measures to counteract the miseries of conditioned life. But this attempt will never be successful. Humanity must be trained to engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. That is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. There can be no happiness in changing one's material conditions, for everywhere there is trouble and misery. Om Agyanati Vinandasya Agyananjana Salakaya Chaksurin Militam Jena Tasmai Vinayana. Sometimes even devotees are put into a miserable condition, or apparently miserable condition, just to set examples for how to deal with material miseries. Devaki, Dokadi, Prahlad Maharaj, and many, many others were put into adverse, the Pandavas were put into seemingly very miserable conditions. So we may wonder why devotees that engage in devotional service are put into such seemingly miserable conditions. Devaki attained her position after a great deal of austerity, many, many lifetimes of tapasya, penances, all types of austerity to become the mother of Krishna. And when Krishna was still just out of the womb, she was deprived of her son. So this is a very hellish condition for a mother who naturally is very attached to her child. Right from the very beginning, to lose her child, this is considered very miserable, very dangerous, very unhappy, not to be able to shelter a young child, what to speak of just having been born. And similarly, Draupadi was put in a very dangerous condition when the Kauravas tried to denude her in front of an assembly full of men, which is also considered a very extremely dangerous, miserable condition for a full-grown woman, married woman. And the Pandavas were divested of their kingdom, they were sent into exile, they had to live like beggars in the forest for many years, and so many attempts were there to kill them, to harass them. Prabhupada comments on these situations in one lecture in Mayapur, 1974. And he was saying how we think sometimes we're in miserable conditions and we don't know how to deal with them. We can remember how even Krishna's greatest devotees, Krishna's most intimate devotees, in fact, because they were appearing in the material world, were put into apparently miserable circumstances and had to grapple with them. They had to deal with them. And we understand from their activities that they transcended them. They were transcendental. So sometimes we may tend to lament that there's some retrograde conditions, difficulty that we have to face, and that somehow it's not fair, it's not right that we're dedicated 100% giving our lives to Krishna. How is it that we can experience these difficulties in the material world? But even the greatest devotees had to face the greatest dangers. And Krishna saved them in the end. They had to undergo difficulty for some time, but Krishna saved them. So because they were stalwart devotees, they passed the test with flying colors. Draupadi cried out to Krishna in a completely surrendered way, just as Gajendra, when he was in a difficult condition. I think he was mentioned in one of these prior verses by Prahlad Maharaj, how he was crying out to Krishna in a completely helpless condition. And because he was feeling, only Krishna can help me, these material solutions will never suffice, as Prahlad is saying here. They will be worse from the miseries themselves. Let me go to the supreme solution, the transcendental solution, Krishna, and he will protect me. So when Draupadi was completely helpless, Krishna miraculously saved her. There was no material solution. No one in the assembly, not even Bhishma, came to her rescue. So it seemed at that time that every last possible material solution to save her was gone. And at that time she depended completely upon Krishna. And similarly, the Pandavas, they were greatly outnumbered. The conditions were very difficult for them. But Arjuna was confident. They had little huddles every evening of the 18 days of the war. Each night there was a conference on the next day's battle strategy. So even though they were making so many strategies and there was so much danger at every step, padam padam vivadam, that's one of the lessons of this verse, that there is danger in every condition, whether it's affluent or poverty-stricken, that Krishna always made them feel confident that he was there guiding them, sometimes giving them directly the strategy, how to go into the battle. But this was not like an ordinary war. In an ordinary war, the soldiers are never sure about what is going to happen. They're very fearful from one moment to the next. Sometimes they're deserting, but they're anxiety stricken because they really don't know what the outcome of a war is going to be. But Arjuna, he was different because he knew what the outcome of the war was going to be. Krishna had assured him a victory. So he was actually fighting on a transcendental platform. He wasn't ridden by material anxiety. This was a different type of anxiety. So sometimes Krishna, by his yogamaya potency, covers the devotee and they forget, even his intimate devotee, his mother, was forgetting he was Krishna. Arjuna was forgetting he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, seeing him as an intimate friend, so that Krishna can enjoy his lila with them. But Arjuna, he was very confident he was going to win the war. So in this great trial of arms, he felt very confident and was able to pass the test because Krishna tested him. He gave him the ultimate test that you're going to have to go into this battle and fight with your relatives. The most also abominable thing to do is to fight one's own relatives from the material point of view. But he was confident. Krishna had given him the ultimatum, so to speak. You can, at least he gave him the final choice. And Arjuna was confident that he could go into this battle. And all the Pandavas in the exile as well, they were confident that in the end Krishna would save them because they had that intimate relationship with Krishna. Unless that confidence is there, then everything in the material world will simply lead to another problem, and every solution will lead to another problem. And every material solution to solve that problem will become a problem in and of itself. Prabhupada says this attempt will never be successful. And the whole situation, whether it's wartime or peacetime, it creates a hellish situation. People have been very upset that atomic energy was used in the war. In the Second World War, there was an atomic bomb. And so there is a big movement against, still is, they're trying to dismantle these weapons, even in peacetime. Or they're very upset that there's so much atomic energy being used to power the world, power energy, atomic energy. So this energy may be used for a good purpose or a bad purpose, or a seemingly good purpose or a seemingly material bad purpose, but every attempt to solve the situation just makes it worse. If it's being used for... There was a big movement to use this atomic energy instead of for bombs, for peaceful purposes. But this has created even more problems. The contamination from the atomic power plants is creating even more fearful situation. It's contaminating the waters, contaminating the atmosphere. There's one atomic power plant built on the earthquake fault in California, near where maybe 1 hour from
Los Angeles and San Diego. And everybody sees it when they drive up and down because they're big cooling towers, right on the ocean, actually. So they say if there's even not a great earthquake, but even some semi-great earthquake, that this whole apparatus can become dismantled and it can release a huge amount of radioactivity into the ocean, into the air, and the whole city there of Los Angeles might have to evacuate, something like what happened with Chernobyl. So this was considered a very wonderful thing, that this horrible atomic energy that built all these horrendous bombs and caused so many millions of people to die and contaminate future generations, so on, radioactivity. We'll use it for peaceful purposes. Use it for energy, because we need more economic means of energy. And now, the means to dispose of the fallout from these things is gradually is being discovered that it is almost equally as dangerous. So there's danger at every step. Danger in war, danger in peace, little earthquake, and one of these things can cause millions of people to die from radioactivity. And of course, there's many of them all over. I think in this country, too, they're promoting these types of things. And they can't dispose of the waste, all of this plutonium and other substances that are giving off great amounts of radiation. So, similarly in the heavenly planets, where the standard of life is so far beyond our own conception here in the material world, there's also so much anxiety. Indra, the king of heaven, is always in anxiety, practically speaking, even though he's living so opulently. Hiranyakashipu suddenly takes over his kingdom. There's some wars coming up time and again between the demigods and the demons. So they're also in a fearful condition. Abrahma Bhuvana Loka. From the topmost planet down to the lowest, they're always in fearful condition. They're always in anxiety. People who are wealthy are always fearful. Margaret Thatcher is always fearful. Someone from the IRA is going to bomb her. The big industrialists like Maxwell or Murdoch, they're always fearful someone's going to kill them. Or I think it was Mr. Guinness, some relative was kidnapped recently from his family, and they had to pay millions of dollars. So there's no secure position. They have to spend, when the prince or somebody goes down in a motorcade down through London, they have to spend millions and millions and millions of pounds just on security for one a day for 4 hours. So even in the most popular and affluent condition, in this day and age especially, and of course in the heavenly planets there's always so much fear, so many wars and anxieties going on. The demigods are... Even they are demigods, they're fearful. They couldn't even go to see Lord Nisringadev. They were so fearful. They had to push a little 5-year-old boy up in front of them because they couldn't go before Lord Nisringadev. So their relationship even with Krishna is not like his intimate devotees, like Prahlad Maharaj, like the Pandavas. It's different. Because they want some position in the material world, they're in that condition of fearfulness. It is only the devotees who are sent for surrender that are abhaya, that they are completely without fear. So Prabhupada was always extolling the virtues of Prahlad Maharaj, because he is completely fearless. So fearless that even falling through the air off the cliff, he wasn't disturbed. We can't imagine that condition, falling through the air without a parachute, and he's without fear. What happens to the living being then? He becomes completely fearful in such condition. And so in so many ways, under the elephant and in the snake pit and in the boiling oil and fire, in the arena full of demons, he was completely undisturbed. So that's beyond our imagination. What to speak of the time of death. But of course a devotee, as we saw in the life of Prabhupada, he's actually completely undisturbed. The anxiety that such pure devotees experience, that is completely on the transcendental platform. The Pandavas apparently were in anxiety in the war, but that was on the transcendental platform. The gopis are in anxiety constantly, but that too is on the transcendental platform. That anxiety is completely spiritual because it's not based on envy. That crying of the gopis in separation, that is also blissful. It's completely spiritual bliss because it's in separation for Krishna only, way beyond the material platform.
on the highest stage. This is on the Sudhasattva platform. So a devotee doesn't try to find a material solution or depend on material circumstances to bring him out of the material miseries. But he becomes completely dependent on Krishna, like Krishna's great devotees. As Prabhupada mentions here, for a materialist to get out of the material condition, he has to work very, very hard. Or one may even undergo many lifetimes of hard work to come to an opulent position. And the irony of it is that once he gets to that position, the anxiety level has not gone away. And it can also be taken away in an instant. It can be lost, as we see happen so much. So Prabhupada says, the entire world is under the illusion that people will be happy by advancing materialistic measures to counteract the miseries of conditional life. This attempt will never be successful. So when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that the only solution to all the problems, is the only shortage, he said, the only lacking was Krishna consciousness, it may have seemed, or it may seem to materialists to be very simplistic, a very simplistic solution to a vast and complicated network of problems. But actually it is the solution. The devotees of Krishna know that there is this great knot of materialism, and we can't untangle it, but it is entangled as if by magic as soon as we engage in devotional service. It's like sometimes you have a knot, maybe in your sacred thread or something, you spend a long, long time trying to take that out piece by piece. And that's the condition of the material world. It's so infinitely complex and entangling to try to undo the problems one by one. In fact, it's not possible, even though there's great effort spent trying to do that. So much effort is spent trying to solve social, political, and economic problems. There's so many billions of pounds spent in this program, so many billions of pounds spent in that program, and another, all separately trying to pull this part of the knot out and that part of the knot out. But a devotee, he knows that immediately this knot just begins to slacken and loosen. We have the personal experience. And projected onto the macrocosm, Prabhupada says, humanity must be trained to engage in transcendental loving service of the Lord. That is the purpose of this Krishna consciousness movement. So as individually we can solve the problem, then the Krishna consciousness movement as a whole movement can solve the whole problem. We have that experience and we have that confidence. So the purpose is to train everyone in devotional service. They can start from any point in time. From any place, just as Prabhupada said, if we pick up the Bhagavatam and read it, there's nectar, something sweet, no matter what side we start to eat it on. It's sweet everywhere. So devotional service is very sweet. And we can engage the whole world in devotional service. We just have to start somewhere. Someone has to start. They can offer a flower to Krishna. They can befriend a devotee. They can do some service for the Krishna consciousness movement. And then their devotional service begins. So we will stop here. It's 8:30. I'll read the verse again. Tasmat priya priya yoga samyoga janma shokagmina sakalayo nishudayamana dukoshadham tadapi dukamatadhyam dihaham bhuman brahmami varame tavadasya yogam. O Great One, Supreme Lord, O Supreme Lord, because of combination with pleasing and displeasing circumstances, and because of separation from them, one is placed in a most regrettable position within heavenly or hellish planets, as if burning in a fire of lamentation. Although there are many remedies by which to get out of miserable life, any such remedies in the material world are more miserable than the miseries themselves. Therefore, I think that the only remedy is to engage in your service. Kindly instruct me in such service. So, we have time for a few questions. I think we're running a little late. Maybe we have time for about 5 minutes. One question. Okay. Yes, Anjali.
If the solution is to offer Krishna consciousness.
If the solution is what?
What I understood from what you were saying is that the ultimate solution to many problems is to increase Krishna consciousness. But still, we do have problems, and we do look for solutions to is that not dependent on Krishna, or what is the temple looking for a particular problems?
Of course, these problems are specifically material problems. When we speak of problems within the Krishna consciousness movement, we understand that this is the movement that is Krishna's movement. It's the Hare Krishna movement, and it's actually Krishna's movement. And it was started by Prabhupada, who's Krishna's pure devotee and a great Mahabhagavat. So just as the Pandavas, they were having to work out among themselves strategies. Sometimes they had different ideas, and they had to thrash out what was the best thing to do to solve the problems they were facing. Sometimes even among themselves, they had to face problems and work them out. So that is the solution that Prabhupada gave us, how to depend on Krishna. We depend on Krishna by depending on his pure devotee and his instructions. And Prabhupada's instructions were that when we face some difficulties or problems, that we should sit down and discuss them threadbare. Those are Prabhupada's exact words. We should discuss them threadbare, which means that they might be discussed for a very, very long time until the threads are bare. So that's not a material solution. Because it's given directly by a pure devotee, it's actually a spiritual solution. But we're depending on Krishna. You've given us this direction. Krishna Prabhupada is pure devotee. We're acting on those instructions, and we know that we'll come to the right solution by acting in that way. However, if we depend on some extraneous method that is not that method, but something contrived, it may be a material solution, and then at that time we may somehow depend on something material. But if the impetus comes from association with devotees, consultation with devotees along these lines, then we can be confident that we'll arrive at the right solution. So, our time is up. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimad Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you.
Prabhupada said, there's so many other living beings in the town as well. The real success is one has to become purified. One has to come here, one has to cleanse the heart. One has to become very serious about following in the footsteps of the six Goswamis and adopt the same mood that they have. Chanting, becoming immersed in Krishna Katha, and dispelling any material elements that may be there within the heart. And that was his idea in the that was his idea in having this yearly festival, Gopunim time. Go to Mayapur, spend a week there, and then come to Vrindavan and spend a week here. A week, Prabhupada felt, was good because that's not quite long enough to commit any serious offences. And our tendencies, of course, he says, familiarity breeds contempt. So that if we come for a short period, that will be enough to actually affect us and purify us. And we won't have long enough to become so familiar with the place that we'll become relaxed and then allow bad habits to come back into our practices. And then commit offences and then thus get some of the disadvantages from being here. Because you can advance 100 times more. Whatever you're doing with that, it's 100 times more effective. But that goes both ways. If you commit offences, they're also 100 times more potent. So Prabhupada's idea was that we should come for short periods and we should get purified, become inspired, and because we all know that, at least anybody that's, say, just been in the West, because I remember before I came to Vrindavan, Krishna consciousness all made sense, and I fully accepted it. I knew it wasn't anything else, but still it was kind of like a little bit theoretical in some respects, because it wasn't practically manifested. But then when I came here to Vrindavan, and we saw practically everything going on here, then it was like Krishna consciousness actually became a reality. I understood this is actually the original culture, and that it's the West that is artificial, not Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada knew that that effect is there for us also. But we could come here and we would see this is the actual way. This is the natural way to live. There are places where people are still sane, where they're still trying to complete or attain the real goal of human form of life. And that it's a perfectly natural process to be situated like that. But this is it. This is the times. So that was his idea. Let the devotees come, let them see practically some aspect of Krishna consciousness, then go out with renewed enthusiasm and preach very vigorously for the rest of the year, and then once a year come back and get purified. If there's ever been any little tinge that has come from so much contact with so many materialistic persons and materialistic culture, then that will all be washed off. That Prabhupada wanted. He didn't want us to come and just live here, but he wanted us to come and preach here also. Just by being here and by following the right standard, that is also preaching. And we can see now that gradually our Krishna Balaram Mandir has become more famous in Vrindavan than even the temples of the six Goswamis. So that says something to Srila Prabhupada's position. We can understand, because the six Goswamis are famous. Everybody knows about Rupa, Sanatan, Jeev, Raghunath Das, Raghunath Bhatta, Gopal Bhatta. Everybody's heard of them, even now, 500 years later. But we can see that Prabhupada also ranks amongst, is included amongst their ranks, that he's also established his temple, which has become famous throughout Vrindavan and actually all over the world, even in a very short period of time. And it will become more famous as time goes on, provided his disciples remain a credit to him. Provided we as his disciples maintain the standards that Prabhupada wanted showing there in his temple, and provided that we don't fall into this trap of just apathetically merging into the existence of Brijbasi life. We want real Brijbasi life, because that means to serve Krishna, to be purely engaged in serving Krishna, not to just be satisfied with just living here and then perform all mundane family kind of activities. Prabhupada wanted the high standard, and he wants that to be expanded more and more. And if we do it, then we see that...
For example, Prabhupada Das, all the wonderful devotees who worked so hard, all of you, to make this center possible. And it's a great privilege for me, my second time to come. First I came on the opening day, and it's nice to see how we're getting our regular Sunday program organized. So I'm very honored to be here. Srila Prabhupada used to often preach about Prahlad Maharaj, so today we're going to read a couple of verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 7th canto, 9th chapter, that were often quoted by Srila Prabhupada and often expanded upon, both in speech and in writing. So we'll speak a little and then we can have some discussion afterwards if there's time. This is the 7th canto, 9th chapter. Text 43. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Vodvijay paradurapyaya vataranyat svadviryagaya namahamritam agnachita shocheta tovimukacheta sa indriyata maya sukaya bharamudvahato vimudhan. O best of the great personalities, these are Prahlad's prayers to Lord Srinidev after he has dispensed with Hiranyakashipu. O best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence, for wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I am simply concerned with love for them. I'll read the purport by Srila Prabhupada. Throughout the entire world, everyone is making big, big plans to adjust the miseries of the material world, and this is true at present, in the past, and in the future. Nonetheless, although they make elaborate political, social, and cultural plans, they have all been described herein as vimudha, fools. The material world has been described in Bhagavad Gita as dukkhalayam ashashvatam, temporary and miserable. But these fools are trying to turn the material world into sukhalaya, a place of happiness, not knowing how everything acts by the arrangement of material nature, which works in her own way. Bhaktite priyamanani gunai karma sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma tathaham iti manmito. Bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities that are in fact carried out by nature. From Bhagavad Gita 3.27. There is a plan for material nature, personally known as Durga, who punished the demons. Although the asuras, the godless demons, struggle for existence, they are directly attacked by the goddess Durga, who is well equipped with 10 hands, with different types of weapons to punish them. She is carried by her lion carrier, or the modes of passion and ignorance. Everyone struggles very hard to fight through the modes of passion and ignorance and conquer material nature, but at the end everyone is vanquished by nature's laws. There is a river known as Vaitirani between the material and spiritual worlds, and one must cross this river to reach the other side, or the spiritual world. This is an extremely difficult task. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Daivihyesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Durachaya, this divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. The same word, Durachaya, meaning very difficult, is used here. Therefore, one cannot surpass the stringent laws of material nature except by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, although all materialists are baffled in their plans, they try again and again to become happy in this material world. Therefore, they have been described as vimudha, first-class fools. As for Prahlad Maharaj, he was not at all unhappy, for although he was in the material world, he was full of Krishna consciousness. Those who are Krishna conscious
trying to serve the Lord are not unhappy, for as one who has no assets in Krishna consciousness is struggling for existence, and is struggling for existence is not only foolish, but extremely unhappy also. Prahlad Maharaj was happy and unhappy simultaneously. He felt happiness and transcendental bliss because of his Krishna consciousness, yet he felt great unhappiness for the fools and rascals who make elaborate plans to be happy in the material world. Now just read the text, the next verse, not the purport. He goes on, "My dear Lord Nisringadev, I see that there are many saintly persons indeed, but they are interested only in their own deliverance. Not caring for the big cities and towns, they go to the Himalayas or the forest to meditate with vows of silence, mona vrata. They are not interested in delivering others. As for me, however, I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to shelter at your lotus feet." Krishna also emphasizes this in the Bhagavad Gita. Yaidam paramam guryam bhakti shavidashiti. One who preaches the glories of Krishna to the masses is very dear to Krishna. Yaidam paramam guryam. And he goes on to say that such a person is the most dear of all. There is no one more dear to the Supreme Lord than one who canvasses on his behalf, or one who preaches his message, acts as his agent. So Prahlad's happiness and unhappiness is very instructive. He's not unhappy for himself because he's actually merged in transcendental ecstasy at every moment. But his sadness is for those who have not the benefit or the privilege to be engaged in thoughts of Krishna at every moment. So he doesn't desire transcendental benefits for himself. And as we see later on, he begs the Lord to forgive his own father, even though he tried in so many ways to kill him. He asks specifically for him to be liberated, for him to be delivered. So that's the quality of a devotee. Lord Chaitanya stressed this quality of compassion and tolerance. Lord Chaitanya is famous for stating this verse, that one should always be very tolerant, more than the tree, forbearing, humble like the grass, and never ask for respect and always offer respect to others. This, he said, you should wear this garland. This is part of his shikshastakam, around your neck always, just like a flower garland. Wear this verse around your neck, just like a flower garland. So Prahlad also exhibited this quality. He was forbearing even though his father tried to kill him, and afterward he was not only forgiving, but he begged the Lord a special favor. He asked him, "You can have anything you want. What do you want? I ask you. You can have any benediction." The Supreme Lord is directly asking him, "No, I don't want anything for myself. I simply want that others who are suffering, they should get the same sense of Krishna consciousness that I have. Let them be happy." The characteristic, as we know in the material world, is that we are envious of others, or we are plagued by the dual characteristics explained in the Bhagavad Gita as desire and hate. Ichabdesha, desire and hate. Those are the characteristics of the material world. We desire to have something we don't have, and we are envious of those who have the thing that we have. Also, we are hankering for things we don't have, and we're lamenting for things. Hankering things we don't have, and for lamenting for things that we couldn't do in the past. So our materialistic nature tells us that I feel happy when others are unhappy, and unhappy when others are happy. That's the nature of the material world. That's our envious, or our lower nature. Our lower nature is when someone is benedicted or having good fortune, we tend to feel sad because we don't have it. And when someone is having misfortune or bad luck, things go wrong, then we tend to feel, well, that's good. That didn't happen to me, so I feel very happy. That's our nature. Therefore, we see so much money is being made in the newspapers or on television. They're showing so much misery. And everyone's thinking, well, it's not happening to me. So I feel very good. At least it's not happening to me. So this nature is being exploited. The nature, our envious nature, is being exploited. It's there, and it's possible to exploit this tendency and become very wealthy by exploiting this tendency. So the purpose of pursuing spiritual life is to overcome this tendency and to be tolerant in all conditions and to be able to transcend these natural feelings of envy. In the spiritual world, there is no such thing as envy. It's described in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita and other parts of the Vedic literature that although there is competition, the gopis are competing for Krishna's favor. One is performing a nice service, making Krishna a flower garland. Another gopi is making some foodstuffs. And they're thinking, she has made a very beautiful garland for Krishna. Let me make some wonderful prasada, which will please Krishna even more. But this is not material envy, because both want to see the other glorified. It's not that one wishes to see the other diminished. So everything is increasing in the spiritual world. Love for Krishna is increasing. And each devotee in the spiritual world is encouraging the other to increase his or her love for Krishna, to go higher and higher. So, as opposed to the nature of material pleasure, spiritual pleasure is increasing in an ever-ending, never-ending upward spiral. Whereas we perform some service or have some good fortune in the material world, it's there for some time, and then it fades away and ends in oblivion. Or there is envy, and someone is trying to take away somebody else's pleasure. But in the spiritual world, everything is increasing. Pleasure is increasing, service is increasing, love is increasing. So Prahlad Maharaj exhibited endless compassion. There was no bounds to his compassion. He wanted everyone in the material world to live. And we read of many other great saints. Today is, in fact, the disappearance day of Haridas Thakur, a great contemporary of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is glorified as the Namacharya, the Acharya of the Holy Name. And he also desired that all the living entities would be liberated. This was his fondest desire. And Vasudev Dutt, another contemporary of Lord Chaitanya, 16th century, he also prayed to Lord Chaitanya that I want to accept all the sins of all the living entities all over the universe. I want to accept the reactions from all their sins upon myself. Please do that so they can be liberated. Please transfer all their sinful activity onto my head so that they can then be liberated, and let me somehow suffer for all of them. And Lord Chaitanya was very kind upon him. So, in our present environment, we hear how Lord Jesus Christ also suffered. He wanted to suffer for the sins of all of his contemporaries. That's the mood of a pure devotee. He wants to suffer if others can be alleviated from suffering. So this is very extreme. Maybe it's a little difficult to understand for us. But these paragons of Krishna consciousness, like Prahlad, Haridas Thakur, and even Jesus Christ, and so many other great saints and rishis, who wanted to see others be happy, to give them Krishna consciousness, were willing to go to great extremes to suffer on their own. When Haridas Thakur, since it's his disappearance day, we'll relate some incidents about his life, was captured. He was being, his captors were instructed to beat him to death in public in all the major marketplaces of Navadvipa. So we understand, the esoteric understanding of Haridas Thakur is that he is sometimes described as an incarnation of Lord Brahma, or at least a partial incarnation, and sometimes elsewhere as an incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj. We're reading about here, or a partial incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj. So he was the embodiment of compassion. When his captors took him out to cane him in 19 different marketplaces, they beat him with sticks But he did not go unconscious. He did not die. They took him to one marketplace after the other. The idea was the present government wanted to establish that what he was doing was punishable and therefore establish a precedent. Anyway, they didn't succeed after beating him severely. And then they finally confessed that they were very frightened. They said, if we go back to our master and say, we didn't dispense with you, you're still alive, we will be killed. What can we do? So taking compassion upon them, he said, that's all right. I don't want you to be killed. I don't want you to suffer. You just throw my dead body in the Ganga, and I will never return, and I will drown, and they will never see me again. So in this way, he was able to save the lives of his captors. And of course, he later was washed ashore, and he survived. But he was willing to suffer, even though they were beating him, and the idea was to kill him. He was willing to suffer just to save them. So devotees are willing to undergo many, many risks and even suffer for the sake of their work. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, who was Srila Prabhupada's guru's father, also a very great Vaishnava, we observed his appearance day just a few days ago, was also very concerned. He wrote many songs where he described the compassionate nature of a devotee, Paradukha Dukhi, one who feels the suffering of others as his own suffering. So as Prabhupada comments here, there are many spiritualists who prefer to seek their own otherworldly salvation or perfection. And the characteristic of Vaishnava is he doesn't want to go back to Godhead alone. Dhruva Maharaj also exhibited the same characteristic. When he was liberated, he insisted that his mother, who put him on the path of liberation and Krishna consciousness, go with him back to Godhead. He refused to go alone. So devotees are very gracious. They personify gratitude. They're so grateful to the Supreme Lord who has so kindly given them Krishna consciousness or lifted them out of the nescience of materialism that they want to devote the rest of eternity to repay it. Yaya tamam prabhajante tam sutai vajanayam vartanayavartante minusha partasarashaha. There is a very wonderful and transcendental, loving, reciprocal relationship between Krishna and his devotees. And the devotee, once he realizes that Krishna's mercy is with him, he feels he can never repay the Supreme Lord. Just like Prahlad, he suffered so much, and Lord Nrisimhadeva came personally to liberate him. Yet he felt there was, when he's prayed his offering to the Lord, there's no limit to how much he feels he has to repay the Supreme Lord. So it is said that one can never repay one's debt to Krishna or the spiritual master. That's the feeling of a devotee. So because he's giving this instruction, he wants so many conditioned souls to be relieved of their misery, and he's sending his agents. And his agents feel they can never offer enough souls to go back to Godhead. So devotees feel they want to deliver as many souls as possible to go back to Godhead. As Prabhupada writes, the material nature is very cruel. Even one who becomes very successful in the material world, at some point, everything is taken away. Or sometimes it's taken away immediately. So the nature is like that. Chanchala, Dukalaya, Shashvatam, it's moving up and down, full of duality. And one who is truly intelligent, Niteshu Ramate Buddha, he does not take pleasure in temporary happiness. He does not delight in these temporary things of the senses, the mind, the body, the intellect. This is what distinguishes intelligence from ignorance. There's a nice verse in the Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter that describes all the qualities of a devotee, among which are knowledge and being able to distinguish matter from spirit. And anything which is contrary to these are described there as being ignorance. So all of these qualities that are exhibited by devotees, these are called knowledge. All the qualities of knowledge are exhibited. Forbearance, tolerance, humility, simplicity, gravity, perfection, compassion, attachment to Krishna, detachment from the material world. These are the qualities that are seen evident in the body of a devotee. He's always exhibiting these qualities. And the great fortune to have a pure devotee like Prabhupada, who came into our midst, was that he exemplified these qualities at every moment, not just when he was teaching or giving some instruction to a disciple, but at every moment these qualities are manifest. So when Lord Chaitanya came also, he's considered the invisible incarnation of Krishna, the incarnation who is not seen, because when he came 500 years ago, he did not play the role of an incarnation of Vishnu, but rather he completely exhibited the role of a devotee of Lord Vishnu. So he's considered the invisible avatar. He was completely absorbed in the role of a devotee. So in that way, even though Krishna came personally 5,000 years ago to speak the Bhagavad Gita and provide the perfection of instruction through the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Chaitanya was even more time, because he came and exhibited everything a devotee should do. He took us through this instruction by his example. He didn't simply order or teach, but he acted out the role of a devotee. He was always very, very dear and acting in a way that was equal to all of his contemporaries. He glorified all of his followers as if they were greater than he was. He was always chanting the name of Krishna. He was always leading big Sankirtan parties, chanting and dancing. And he just went everywhere. He walked the whole length and breadth of India. And in this way, distributed love of Godhead just like a great flood, like a great tidal wave, and gave every breath for this purpose. And sometimes we would see Lord Chaitanya, he came before Lord Jagannath, he prostrated himself, he became unconscious. Sometimes he exhibited the symptoms of a devotee in ecstasy. He would sometimes tremble, laugh, cry. And when he was carrying on his great discourse with Prakasananda Saraswati in Benares, he was asked, "Why are you chanting like this instead of studying Vedanta?" He said that my spiritual master, he told me that you should just chant and dance. That should be your main business. He said, "I was not so intelligent that I could understand Vedanta, but I was told to chant and dance. And as I began to chant the holy name of God and dance in ecstasy, I felt transcendental ecstasy. And somehow this transcendental sound vibration took over my whole body and mind, and I began to chant and dance like a madman." So the assembly in Benares appreciated Lord Chaitanya's presentation and could understand by his behavior and his speech that he was actually a full manifestation of the Supreme Lord. So in this way he traveled all over India and brought love of God like a great tidal wave. And Bhakti Vinod, who was in, of course, the same succession, predicted that one day that devotees would come from all over the world to chant and dance Jai Sachi Nandana in the holy city of Mayapur, or what was then considered part of Navadvip. They would come from every country in the world and chant and dance in ecstasy, regardless of their nation of origin or their race or their social status or their sex or anything. They would come and chant and dance in ecstasy together. Bhakti Vinod predicted this over 100 years ago. And he also predicted there would be a great personality who would spread this Harinam, chanting the Maha Mantra, all over the world. And of course he was benedicted by a son, a great son, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who ordered his disciples, Srila Prabhupada, to do just that, inasmuch as he said, "You will please take this Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world." So coming down from Krishna himself through Lord Chaitanya, Bhakti Vinod, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, Srila Prabhupada, this mood of Prahlad Maharaj is exemplified. To take great risk and undergo great pains and austerities to liberate the conditioned souls, to educate them, to give them the power to distinguish between knowledge and ignorance, between spiritual pleasure and material pleasure. The Bhagavad Gita describes that spiritual, in the 17th chapter, that spiritual intelligence is a little difficult in the beginning. It's almost like poison. But it is nectar afterwards, in the end. And similarly, material life is sometimes very enjoyable in the beginning. You see, when we're young, everything is a very wonderful, new, fresh experience. Then in old age, practically speaking, all the very same things are painful. So the material world is fraught with difficulty. And although pleasurable in the beginning, every pleasure described in the Bhagavad Gita has a beginning and an end. Atesha Ramate Buddha. So to be able to distinguish, this is what marks a sadhu, to be able to convey that actually everything that we see around us, everything that bodes great happiness and pleasure, wonderful, beautiful nature, so many fine songs and beautiful creations by man, by nature, are a source of great happiness. So much wonderful poetry and music. But a sadhu is able to distinguish matter from spirit. And all of these wonderful, beautiful things, Krishna says, they all spring from but a spark of my splendor. So a sadhu knows that everything that is wonderful, great, beautiful, that comes from the Supreme Lord. That is just a tiny, tiny fraction of what the Supreme Lord is. And because it's temporary, one becomes very careful not to become attached to that which is temporary. And he seeks his pleasure from within. Because Krishna is very kind, as soon as we take one step towards him, he takes 10 steps towards us. So, as Krishna says, a little bit of effort on this path brings great rewards. There's no diminution. So we're very fortunate to have had the association of such great souls as Prahlad Maharaj, and through Srila Prabhupada, we're having his association, having the association of Haridas Thakur and Lord Chaitanya. When Prabhupada came to the West, very few people had ever heard of Lord Chaitanya, or even Krishna for that matter. But because of Prabhupada's devotion, his exemplary practice and his devotion, just by the way he worshipped Lord Chaitanya and Krishna, immediately there was an understanding that there is a great personality who is worshipping Krishna or God as he should be worshipped. So devotees will always be characterized not by what they say only, but by how they act and what they do. So great man is measured. By his deeds. Deeds are exemplary, then all the world will pursue them. So the nature of Krishna consciousness is that it is ever expanding. Just like spirit, it is always growing. Something we don't have experience of. It continues to grow and expand. So, since a devotee is very humble, his heart is very great. It is described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami that a devotee's heart becomes very, very big. It actually begins to melt like butter because he's very humble and very compassionate. So it's a credit and a great privilege to be here to see that so many of you have labored so hard out of your own compassion and devotion to Krishna and compassion for others, following the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada to open this nice center and give everybody access. Prabhupada's vision was so scientific. He opened so many centers all over the world, almost 300 now. And even now we have so many little sub-centers, non-hot groups. But he didn't simply wander about, but he created an entire little Hare Krishna universe on this planet with the idea that so millions and millions of books, he set up a system to distribute these books by the millions, literally, and then provide centers where people who became interested could further pursue Krishna consciousness in the association of devotees and the deities or the Supreme Lord. So this is Prabhupada's great genius. He didn't simply give lectures, or didn't simply write a few books, or open a few centers. He did all those things. So so that the most systematic way possible to give everyone access to Krishna consciousness would be there. And this way, fully exhibited the characteristics of Mahabhagavan, like Prahlad Maharaj. There's no limit to the pure devotee's mercy. When they think of the condition of suffering humanity, they they actually cry, feeling the same pain as their own. So these great visions and institutions that Prabhupada has set up were done simply with that idea, to alleviate the suffering of the living entities. As Prahlad says, my only concern is for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them. So as this great Mahabhagavat, Prahlad Maharaj could see. So even at the age of 5 years old, he was assembling all of his schoolmates who are from very substantially well-to-do families, getting them to chant Hare Krishna in ecstasy, and teaching them that actually this material life is very temporary, even at great risk to himself. And it was due to this that his father tried to punish him. But he was just speaking the truth. A devotee always speaks very truthfully. Sometimes it may be a little unpleasant, but the fact is that the truth is the truth. Of course, with austerity of the tongue, he's speaking very pleasantly according to time, place, and circumstance. Even though it is maybe a hard and difficult truth, he's speaking in a very palatable way. This is called austerity of the tongue. One has to speak satya priya hitam chayat, that which is truthful but also in a pleasing way, and that which is very beneficial and not agitating, and always speaking from Vedic literature. So these are the characteristics and qualities of a sadhu. And even though we are all neophytes and followers, if we try to convey what we have learned without any motivation to gain anything for ourselves, but simply to transmit spiritual knowledge, then it will be effective. So it doesn't matter whether we're neophytes or somewhat practiced, or whether we're initiated or uninitiated. If the impetus to repeat what we've heard is there, then we will be successful. Just like Prabhupada used to say constantly, if I have any success, or if I'm due any credit, the only credit is that I have tried to repeat what my spiritual master said. Bhakti Siddhanta is a great, great, another Mahabhava. And in that repeating process, if I have repeated purely without any motivation, without any ulterior motive, then I feel my life has been a success. So this is the nature of Evam Parampara Paptam Evam Rajarshi Yogita Parampara, to transmit without any motivation spiritual knowledge coming from Krishna himself. And therefore, we can see how nicely this center is grown up, not by some material calculation, but by the direct mercy of Krishna, in fact. These things don't happen by some material calculation, but they happen by the energy that's coming through the devotees from Krishna himself. Otherwise, how is it possible that so much Krishna consciousness could spread around the world in such a short time? That is Krishna himself. So I'll read the verse again. O best of the great personalities, I'm not at all afraid of material existence. Wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them. And one last comment, and we can have some questions. Prahlad Maharaj is the personification of the devotional principle of Smaranam. That is, he was never for a moment not thinking of Krishna. Even when he was pushed off the edge of a cliff, when he was thrown into a pit of snakes, his meditation was never broken, not for one second. And due to this fearlessness, Krishna always protected him. He couldn't be killed. So the idea of Krishna consciousness is to come to that point of meditation, where even though we have to live in the material world and act in the material world, somehow we should train ourselves so that our meditation on Krishna, particularly through vibrating the Maha Mantra, is never broken. So we'll stop there. And you'd like to ask anything or say anything?
Yes.
Maharaj, some historical records of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu meeting Guru Nanak Ji. Could you elaborate on that?
I'm not familiar. I heard that there was a meeting, but I don't know. Maybe somebody else knows. Do you know? Anything more?
No. You have not heard of that.
I've heard such a thing took place, but I don't know any details.
Likely, but that has not been mentioned anywhere in the books of Sikhs or anywhere in our literature regarding Mahaprabhu Chaitanya.
Yeah,
that not,
that's true.
Maybe that somebody might have out of affection or out of Shraddha, he might have said that this happened, but actually that I don't think. Because that time was a little bit earlier, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's.
Mm.
Guru Nanak has been at a later age.
Yes.
Because at the time of Guru Nanak, this Vrindavan and Mathura, Vrindavan sites were existing. And here this Swami Haridas, he was a later incarnation than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Mm.
So Swami Haridas was living at that time in Vrindavan. Vrindavan was actually paced out by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because when he came over to Vrindavan site, he got into class and he was telling that